welcome to Declarations of War. I'm your host, Alexei Vkart, joined by my co-host, Jin Tan.
Hello.
Hello. I want to give a special shout-out to Lomax from the San Francisco meetup. Just saw him yesterday, as a matter of fact, and we learned a lot about Lomax. In particular, he's super fucking rich in the game, loves his battleships, but more impressively, has a 7-monitor setup, plus a laptop, and he has, on multiple occasions, multi-boxed an EVE account while playing Dragon Age and playing Skyrim. Like,
what an absolute madman.
Yeah. Like, he's killing dragons, he's farming on one game, and he's PvPing, and I think he's, like, scouting or mining or something. That's absolutely ridiculous. So, what a legend, this guy.
Yeah. I'd like to give my shout-out to a couple of very specific people. I'd like to give a shout-out to Apothny and Jester Trek. Whilst I might not have agreed with how overcritical they were on the forums, they at least were willing to work with the CSM lately to help us improve our communication and come up with ways that we can be more visible to the players.
And of course, a special shout out to our sponsor, EVEbet. It's eve-bet.com, New Eden's premier betting service, where you can bet on EVE stuff and real-life sports, all with your ISK. You know that they're going to be having Alliance Tournament bets out the wazoo, so you're going to want to get in on that action. They've handled hundreds of trillions in bets since opening, so they are a service that you can trust, and they very much give back to the community. They also have more casual games if you're interested, like blackjack and slots, but mostly I advise you to go there for the industry standard odds on sports and esports, with more items being added for you to bet on every week. That's eve-bet.com. Alright, we had a poll out there. Should AT prize ships be allowed in the tournament? This has been a point of discussion for the community for a while now, and is a really divisive discussion in our audience as well. 55% say yes, which means 45% think they shouldn't be allowed at all.
And the most interesting thing is, between this poll being launched and it being revealed here, we actually know that CCP has taken a very their own stance on this topic.
Would you really like to go into that? Well,
yeah,
since you're the master of transition.
They have chosen to limit AT ships, or specifically uniques, as they put it. So that includes the Golden Magnate, the Silver Magnate, and a couple of other minor ships, to one per setup. So you can only bring one, you know, you can only bring an Atana, not an Atana and two Marakas, or whatever, you know, something like that. Which drastically reduces the impact they have without completely minimizing it.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's the way they want to play it. I don't know.
I personally agree with it. I think that once you get to the later stages in the tournament, specifically when you've got about the top eight, you are going to run into times where a Dark Horse team will be almost completely nullified by certain AT-based comps. The example I really like to bring is the Cambion-supported Atana Mobile Tinker that was used last year to great effect, and the year before that as well. It was incredibly strong because it had all the rep power of a Tinker setup as well as the tank without having that kind of static nature of it, and whilst some of that does go away with the fact that, you know, remote transfers aren't allowed, and the general points changes also make it less viable because you can no longer concentrate so many points in so few people. But the Cambions and I think Marakas that were normally used in it just added so much power to that setup that it became effectively, well, you had to effectively have either ban it or have a setup that was dedicated specifically to counter it. And that made it very, very difficult to fight, and it warped the meta around that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think it's a pretty decent limit. I'm going to miss, like, seeing double Marachas and stuff like that. But I think it will add a little bit of actually extra excitement, because you'll only have one of them in a given setup. It'll probably be the centerpiece of said setup, and if it can be killed, it's going to be very hype.
I actually somewhat doubt that. I think we're going to see a lot of more frigates, things like the Malice and the Cambion this year, even compared to previous years, where they were still quite often used, just because they are low point. You know, they are assault frigates, which are four, which is a slot you'd normally take an interdictor for, or occasionally an assault frigate. And that just makes that, and they can add effectively what is, you know, cruiser to even battle cruiser in the case of the Cambion power to a setup. So it makes it, it's a really, really a point efficient addition to your composition without having to massively change it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that, especially now that there's even smaller numbers of teams. We talked about it on a previous show, but you're going to have less people to devote to those like utility mid-slot frigates, so it makes sense to have one that can pull double duty.
I've definitely seen a trending towards more either dedicated tackle or dedicated anti-tackle than we saw last year, where last year it was a lot more focused on... last year in AT-12 as well. We're very, very, had a very, very E-War-focused frigate meta, which is why we saw so many Merlins and Worms.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Damp War was so integral to it.
Well, speaking of Alliance Tournament ships, the Alliance Tournament prize ships for this year have been announced. And we're going to go take a look at them. I know Jin's, like, creaming himself over the frigate here.
Oh, it's so cool. It's so interesting.
We've got the... Is it Cadiz?
I have no idea. I'm going to call it the Cadiz. I know
Caedes.
Yeah, I tend to go for the most obnoxious pronunciation of anything when I get the chance, because it helps trigger people. For example, I do say the Gila, because people always otherwise say the Gila.
Well, my pants were triggered when I saw the screenshot, because it looks gorgeous.
It does. That gold, it looks like a reverse Sarum skin. Oh, I hope that that's the AT skin that we get, because if we do, I'm going to try extra hard to win for that.
It's also got that white detailing on the wing and the under penis, whatever you call it, that reminds me of the Blood Raider skins.
That is the regular skin for it. It's like that, except without the gold and very dark crimson on the top.
Mm. It's glorious.
So, yeah. Oh, actually, speaking of the skins, before we get into this, I'd like to say that there's something that will probably interest a lot of our audience. Here in the skin section, if you don't mind me skipping ahead a little bit.
Go ahead.
They said specifically that the skin will be able to be applied to all Blood Raider ships. Now, I don't know if I'm reading that correctly, but that implies to me that they now have kind of the technology to apply one skin to a series of ships that they choose, as opposed to having each skin be an individual item. I don't actually know anything about that from my CSM stuff. I haven't talked to any of the people who are involved in that.
It's possible. I think a simpler explanation that I'm more inclined to believe is that they'll just have created skins for all the Blood Raider ships, and you will get versions of those.
Don't ruin my dreams, friend. I want to be able to buy one skin that applies to multiple ships. But yeah, the Cadiz is absolutely wonderful. It's not quite as overpowered as some of the previous frigates we've seen, but it adds to that a lot of very interesting features and things we haven't really seen used before in from a game design perspective. For example, it has one gun that has a 400% bonus to small energy turret damage. So that means your one gun is going to be doing the same as five guns normally would do, because of how that works.
So crazy.
Yeah, and that means obviously that you can overheat it for a very long period of time, because you won't have the heat bleed from your other high slot modules unless you overheat them as well.
And it does have other high slots. It's got three, which you're clearly intended to put Nas and Newts on, because it gets a 20% bonus to a mount and a 25% bonus off to fall off. Not optimal range and fall off, just fall off. But that was the strangest of all the design choices there.
Yeah, this is something that a lot of people have been quite angry about, but it actually makes quite a lot of sense, because it's intended to be a close-range ship, as you can see by a lot of its other bonuses, and I assume we'll probably see that in its base stats. It'll probably be very fast, but very inagile, because that's how they tend to differentiate between a ship that wants to go fast, get into someone's face, and then stay there, as opposed to something that wants to sit at 20k. They'll make it a lot less agile.
Actually, I disagree. I think it's a kite ship, because one of the bonuses, and it has a lot of bonuses, folks. Let's do the full rundown here. It's got 20% bonus to the NOS drain amount, which we talked about. 25% bonus to fall off range for your turrets. Well, turret, in this case. A 20% bonus to stasis web range. A 20% reduction in cloaking device CPU requirement. It's got 10% bonus to probe strength, 25% bonus to the fall-off range of your newts, and again, roll bonus 400% to small genie turrets, and basically a whole bunch of covert ops stuff. It can fit the covert ops cloak, covert ops cynogen, plus 10 to relic and data analyzer strength, very short cloak reactivation delay, it's only 5 seconds, no targeting delay after cloaking, so it's an excellent hunter. But I think the range bonuses, especially to the Webifier, indicate to me that it is not actually a close-range ship. You're supposed to be fighting at around 20-ish.
The thing is, but even with the 100% fall-off range to Nosferatus and energy neutralizers, you're still only going to be neuting to about 10 to 11k.
Exactly.
A good range. So that implies to me that you're going to be wanting to fight at 10k. You're going to be fighting within scram range. Probably dual prop. Obviously, with 3 mid slots, dual prop might not be the best of options for it.
But no, in fact, you really can't if you want to use the web bonus at all, which you definitely do.
One web cruels have definitely been a thing so far in the tournament, or at least in practice. We've seen a lot of shield cruels getting used, actually.
Oh, I'm thinking more of an actual PvP scenario, not necessarily in a tournament.
I'm specifically kind of locked in tournament mode right now, I'm sorry. My brain is kind of...
This might see tournament play with the web range bonus. But I think with its hunter role, it's clearly more designed for TQ use.
It's basically what happened if they mushed a Freki and a Malus together.
Yeah, pretty much.
Actually, no, it basically is just an upgraded Freki with like Blood Raider coating to it. Because it has that same web bonus. But yeah, I quite like it. I think it's going to be very interesting, and I really hope that I can maybe get one. Because with that cloaking, the kind of cloaking things, you could probably kill like a Exploration Tengu or something with this relatively easily.
Yeah, it's definitely a very dangerous ship. It's even got a bit of a drone bay, which is cool.
Oh yeah, it's got 30 meters cubed and 10, like, you can actually launch. So that's 3 flights of lights, or if you want to be a massive... If you want to be a true coward, you can have 3 flights of ECM drones as well.
Now into the cruiser. Off the Ishimu hull, the Rabisu.
And this is quite possibly one of the most anticipated ships from a tournament perspective. We've actually expected for something people have talked about and theorycrafted around for a long time, because it's effectively an offensive logistics ship. And that is incredible. It has 6 high slots, 3 mid slots, and 6 low slots, which is the same as the Guardian, you might notice. But
for bonuses, we've got the optimal range and fall off that you would normally expect from a Blood Raider ship to the Nosses, and a 20% bonus to the drain amount for your Mark Cruiser. For Mimitar Cruiser, 20% bonus to logistic drone transfer amount, which is very strange. 20% bonus, or excuse me, 20% reduction in cloaking devices, and you also have a 3rd per skill level for logistics cruisers. 20% bonus to remote armor repair, optimal and fall off, 15% reduction in activation cost for reppers, and 2% per level reduction in cycle time. Roll bonus, 80% reduction in power grid requirements, 100% bonus to remote armor repair, optimal and fall off, can fit cloaks. And energy Nosferatu fitted to the ship will drain the targeted ship's capacitor regardless of your own capacitor level.
I would like to just quickly clarify that the the Blood Raiders do not typically get a bonus to optimal range and fall off to Nosferatus or...
You're correct. My apologies.
Yeah, that's effectively the same bonuses that the Guardian gets, beefed up slightly, but for its cap transfers. So what it is it's an offensive logistics. You are actively encouraged to fly towards the enemy, get in range of them, and suck the life out of them so you can keep the rest of your team alive. And
it's a combination Curse Guardian.
It really is. It really is. I absolutely love this thing. Everyone I've talked to has been like, this is one of the coolest ships they've ever made. It's not like the Atana, where that was like kind of the first cloaky logi. It was cool. It was very interesting. And obviously it had a huge showing in the tournament scene just because of how powerful it is. But this is the kind of thing you would build a comp around. This is the perfect logistics for, say, an armor rush comp, because it provides, you know, what is effectively e-war control, along with incredibly powerful reps. I mean, that 2% reduction in cycle time per level is 10% reduction. And whilst you might not think that's a huge amount, it really is. That's
especially for armor, which everyone that's listening to this podcast should know. The amount repaired applies at the end of the cycle as opposed to shield, which starts at the beginning. So that cycle time reduction is massive.
I think the only thing that someone's actually come and said, I wish that it did this, is someone said that they wished it had an 80% reduction in energy Nosferatu power grid requirements too, so you could fit large Nosses to it. But that would be quite broken, because it would be able to fill up its capacitor in one full heavy newt cycle, heavy NOS cycle, or something thereabouts, judging by how the bow works.
But yeah, I'm going to agree with you here. I will guarantee you that one of the teams that wins this prize will use it next year as like a centerpiece to their comp, or at least one comp. It's too good to not use.
The other thing I've got to say is it looks beautiful. Like, the Ashimu and the Kruon in themselves have very, very pretty hulls, but, it looks like a gold-plated bottle opener. It's wonderful.
It does a little bit. And I'm a big fan of the Ashimu hull, just base. I think it looks great. I think it's got a cool color scheme. I think it's got... I'm a big fan of the ship itself.
If you're a fan of the Ashimu, you're going to see a lot of them used this year, I think.
Oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
I tried to build, last time I was in charge of an AT team, I tried to build a comp around the Ashimu, and it actually did alright in testing. But,
now with 2 points different, it's a whole different ball game, trust
me. Yeah. I missed my year, man, it's a little too early.
next time. Actually, what would be the next time? It would probably be, because we had Sancho last year, and we had Garistas the year before that, and Angels the year before that.
Mordus, I'm guessing.
That'd be interesting.
Mordus or Serps? Probably Serps, I guess, because they're doing a lot of stuff with Serpentis right now.
But they are also doing a lot with, what are they called? The Upwell. Upwell is being supported by Mordus. So you could see an Upwell tournament, perhaps. That would be very interesting. But,
the code is real.
Oh, please, yeah, just, like, Mordus Legion issue, Swiffle. When?
2 point reduction to the bar guest.
Oh, God, 2 point reduction to the Orthrus. and the Garma. 2 point Garmas everywhere.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Make it happen, CCP. It's too crazy not to do.
Oh, God.
All right, so a whole bunch of teams got drawn. I think we should go through and pick out our highlights. Let's do the 12 teams that bought in directly. These guys are just paid to be in. For me, the big ones, and they're all pretty well-known teams, I think. We've got Exodus in here, End of Life, PL, Phoebe Freeport bought into the tournament. Thought that was interesting. Shadow Cartel, Afterlife, Ronin, Tuskers are back, and Try.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm sorry, I'm just looking up the final results, because I know that they've seeded them, and I'm trying to find that desperately, because I couldn't find it on the Deflux page. yeah, they've it's not done subjectively, thankfully. Well, thankfully for us, because it's put us in a really nice spot for this AT.
While Jin's looking that up, I'll go over a couple highlights from the random draw. A Band Apart will be in there. That's Stay Frosty guys. Agony is back. Affirmative is back.
Goonswarm sadly did not make it in for the second year running.
Yeah, how about that? Testa's made it in, though.
I think, did Test not buy their way in? Because they were 16 last year. Yeah.
They have purchased.
Yeah, everyone who was able to buy their... everyone who bought their way in was top 16 last year. Just for reference, that's what you have to be. So, Phoebe Freeport had a very, very strong AT team last year. And I believe most of their team is still in there, so that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I would expect them to do better. I think Phoebe Freeport was a real dark horse last year, and this time around they're only going to have more experience, so I'd say their chances are probably pretty good. I don't know if they'll get to the finals or anything like that, but I think they'll have a strong showing.
Yeah, and do you know what we should do right now? I think we should say, what's one team that you don't think people are going to think about that you're going to that you expect to take it to, I don't know, let's say, you know, top 16? What's your dark horse for this year? It's going from now, just from no information, what's your dark horse?
Goonswarm is in this year. They entered but were not drawn. Gotcha. Let's see. My dark horse team. I kind of want to say A Band Apart. I don't have anything to really base that on other than my gut feeling there. I think they're going to do well this year.
Yeah. I'd say Circle of Two, but I think a lot of people are already aware of how good they are. So instead I'm going to go all the way down the list and say White Legion, which a lot of people might not expect because Black Legion have historically been kind of not great at the Alliance tournament, and obviously White Legion itself has collapsed.
Yeah.
But I've seen, I know a couple of people who are involved in that team, and they are very, very, very clever. There's some very intelligent people there, and they're a French team, which is historically, you know, a specific language-speaking team has always kind of boded well for a team's chances for some reason.
Mm.
So I'm gonna say that White Legion will make it to the top 16 this year.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I've also got the auction results here, where do you want me to go from bottom up for prices, perhaps?
Sure, why not?
Yeah, we got Rote Capel bought in for 81 plex, Snuffed Out bought in for 82, Feigned Disorder bought in for 90 plex, Curatoris Veritatis Alliance, me, bought in for 90 plex, Brave Collective brought in for 125 plex.
Oh my god.
Lumpy bought in for 130 plex, Northern Coalition bought in for 146 plex, and Vydra Reloaded, which is a Russian team, bought in at 207 plex.
Oh my lord.
Which puts the total buy-in maximum for this Alliance tournament at nearly $3,000 US. That is a lot of money. I don't think there's any other competitive game that has a $3,000 buy-in.
They're talking about, at this point, all other competitive games are talking about how much they're paying out.
Very true, very true.
Holy shit.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money. So, have you had a look at the commentators?
Yeah, I just wanted to go into that real quick. We've got Chesser, Zarbox Toril, who I'm very excited to see. I'm glad that they picked him. A guy I've never heard of, Moderator, and Gorian Vassanar.
I have no idea who Gorian is, so you might.
Neither do I. But Chesser is a pretty known quality. I think he's a good pick. Zarvox, been a real big fan of his streams the past year. He's been very on point with good commentary on cam, so I expect a lot out of him.
He's been working with Bay Artege a little bit, hasn't he? With his streams of open practices and talking about them. At least I've seen some of him on there. So that's
I'm not able to usually watch him, but whenever there's like a huge fight or event happening, he tends to be on top of it. So it's like if I am able to tune in from work and there's a huge fight happening, like he's my go-to guy.
Mm-hmm. Moderator, I actually know because he used to commentate, I believe, World of Tanks. Or at least he sounds very, very similar to someone who commented World of Tanks. I watch quite a lot of competitive games, even though I don't play them. So I think he may have gotten onto it from that experience, in which case, all power to him. It was very sad to not see Apothy on this list this year, though, because he is always a cheery addition to the group.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, very hyped for the tournament. I think it's going to be good. It's one of my favorite times of the year, generally, to be an EVE player. So much fun. Cannot wait.
Very much so. I'm so looking forward to it.
In Tranquility news, World War B officially over while the podcast was on our short break between episodes. The Goons have decided to relocate. They've given up attempting to reconquer their former homeland, and now they've gone south to their former homeland. They're attacking Delvin Quirius.
It's Delvmark XX.
Yeah, jeez.
Yeah, seems like Delve is always the place where people go. And it is firmly in control of Condi right now. The actual flow of the war is almost to a ridiculous degree in Goonswarm's hands at this point.
Well, I think that's to be expected. There really wasn't any power sitting down there that could really challenge them.
No.
And some of the guys down there just decided, well, fuck that, we're not even going to try, we're just going to flip to them anyway, which made things even worse.
Yeah, this is actually something I talked about in one of my articles on the subject of where Goons might go, although in the context of Quirius. I said that the best way that they could attack a location like this, it would be to flip one or two members of the locals, and then from there the whole structure would collapse, because, as always, without the trust in more distributed coalitions like this, you end up with the whole thing just tumbling down. And we saw a great example of what happened in the when you do have a very strong, very centralized coalition, and someone tries to leave you down in, I believe it is Catch and a little bit of Immensi, with Infamous deciding to leave Stainwagon, and they were not happy. Stainwagon is not happy. A lot of Corps of Infamous are also not happy. So it looks like we're in the middle of watching something vaguely fail Cascadey go on down there. But Quirius and Delve seem to be the targets, although I don't think Goons have looked at Quirius yet.
I'm sure they will, though. So.
Oh, yeah, I don't think there's any chance that they won't at least poke at the edges. There's practically no reason for them not to. And also,
I think,
we've seen the legendary Goon Cap fleet as well. We've seen them drop super caps.
Oh, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've learned a lot from their experience up north. I think they'll try to hold less territory in general. But I still think while they will control Delve, they'll probably look to install some kind of satellite state or states in Quirius. That just seems to be the way people that own Delve operate. So I think it's just a matter of time before they're done there. They'll seek to make Quirius a bit more friendly in complexion and install some blues down there. Whether it's people that were in Delve and got relocated and they decide to keep, or whether it's former allies or maybe new allies that they make, unclear yet, but I think they will not own it personally. I think they won't allow a hostile entity staging base type situation to be in Quirius either.
Mm-hmm. So why don't we take a look at Quirius, actually, because it's very interesting. It's the thing is, there was almost already a war going on in Quirius before the Goons came, and I don't think anyone there has wanted to extricate themselves from that war quite yet.
No, I just talked to two guys who are involved in the war, and they're very much into it. Like, they're having a good time.
Oh yeah, I can imagine. It's always fun to get, to have some big enemy knocking on the door. It's one of the reasons why I stay in Providence. There's always someone out there to challenge you, and someone out there to force you to try new things. And I love that. And I think a lot of entities that are currently in Delve are going to feel that, because obviously they can retreat to NPC Delve. So ATAC-E and 1DH and all those very, very famous systems, I'm sure people have heard of them before, and launch their assaults right again.
Yeah, the Delve NPC stations are an interesting thing. They don't quite have the same effect as they do in Pure Blind, where, generally speaking, if you're staging in Pure Blind, those NPC stations, you're doing some kind of invasion. Whereas in Delve, it's less that, although it does happen. It's more like the place where the owners of Delve put all their shit just in case they get kicked out.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting dynamic.
Fountain Core is another place like that, where it's almost a retreating point, although it actually ended up being kind of a point of hot contest, actually, if we remember. The Fountain Core groups that developed from it were very, very good at harassing and attacking the previous owners.
Yep. They're actually... I don't know who currently lives there, but just a really good core competency up there, almost to the point where they didn't really need or want Sov, they just preyed on whoever took Sov around them.
Mm-hmm.
They're very efficient at it, which is cool.
But yeah, Delve War is quite underway, and I'm hoping to get myself down there at some point and have a poke about so I can give you a report from the field.
Nice. Definitely look forward to that.
Yes, but unfortunately I have been quite a little bit more busy than I have usually with the CSM, because there was some, I'd hesitate to call it drama, but there was some public prodding of us on Reddit and a couple of the formats. Just
speaking of transitions, our next item, the CSM update. Why don't you take it away, Jin?
I'm so good at segues, man. You didn't
You're
even
the best
it was
at
happening.
Segues. Best co-host I've ever had at segues. This is great.
I'd like to seg my way into other topics. It was very publicly asked what the hell was going on, because people didn't feel like we were communicating enough. And whilst I had attempted to do some of that with my weekly updates, those still exist, please go read them, they're great. People felt as if we weren't a public as face as CSM10 or CSM9 and even CSM8. And they asked us, basically, are you guys still active? Are you still doing things? Or is CSM, CSM not, is the CCP not communicating with you? And we had to kind of tell people that we just had a different philosophy on the CSM than a couple of past ones did, as well as different, makeup of our groups.
What hadn't worked in your estimation? Or rather, I guess, what criticisms did you see in those articles that you think were fair, and which did you think were... Because I know sometimes the criticism you receive, you're like, what, really? Like, what about this, and this? All things that are like exactly what you're talking about that we've been doing for weeks. What did you think was like spot on and fair, and what was sort of exaggerated or missed a point kind of thing?
What I felt was fair was people saying they didn't know effectively once they found out that we were communicating in some capacity, specifically on the official forums, in my own little threads, and, through Twitter and talking to people individually. They kind of understood that, but they felt that communication, those communication channels hadn't been clearly represented to people enough. So we're going to kind of try and work on that a bit more. We're going to get people on some more podcasts, and specifically Apothny has offered to work with us to create a kind of like semi-regular podcast where we discuss things with them and we talk about what's been going on in the CSM to the best of our ability. So that's going to be very interesting. Also, I've made a conscious effort to go and reach out to as many podcasts as I know and say, hey, can you have us on? And if I haven't reached out to you, come and find me. I'll definitely take up an hour of your time and blather about something or something else. But other than that, I don't really feel like much of the other criticism was too valid. There was a lot of personal attacks in there, and a lot of people very specifically comparing us to other CSMs, specifically CSM8, which had a lot of bloggers and a lot of people who are very publicly facing. And I felt it was quite disingenuous to say, hey, you know, this is this many weeks along, and the last CSM had written like 40 blogs on it. Where is your blog? And we have to explain that, well, none of us are blog writers. That doesn't interest us at all.
Yeah, if you wanted blogs, you probably should have elected some of those.
That's effectively what he said, yes. But no, I feel the CSM is going really well. A lot of questions have come down about communication with CCP, and I think they've been taking a pretty great approach to it. We've been trying to be very proactive in talking to people within CCP and get meetings with people and discuss specific topics that we think might be a concern. And one of the big parts of that is I'm currently running, well, myself and a couple of other CSMs are trying to put together a NullSec FC roundtable to talk about issues that are kind of shared across all entities and all sizes and things like that, as we want to specifically bring those up at the summit.
Awesome.
Yeah, don't know how well that's going to go. Still haven't sorted it out yet, unfortunately.
Have they announced the dates for the summit yet?
Yes, they have. It will be September the 12th to September the 15th.
All right.
I am flying up there on September the 11th, God help me. But
not the best day to fly.
Not the greatest of omens, no.
A little cringe. I'm sure you'll be fine.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll be fine as well. I'm not that paranoid. But I'm really looking forward to that summit. Everyone in the CSM is working to prepare for it. And if you feel that there's something that needs to be brought up at the CCP at the summit, definitely come and contact me. I'd really prefer to get kind of roundtables together. That's the kind of thing I've been very big on this year, where I try and get, five or six people from different ends of one specific topic and, talk things through and try and come up at, key points that everyone can agree on. And then try and bring those to CCP, as I think that's the best way to do it, rather than make it kind of a more meta, I've only asked this group, so they only give me this response, and I bring that to CCP, and it only helps that group, which I don't think anyone wants. I don't think that's what the CSM should be about.
All right.
There you go. That's my little monologue about the CSM.
Moving on to host highlights, my highlight is actually a piece of fan mail. Some of you guys may remember this guy, Stevie McStevo. He's a brand new player that I came across in EVE. He's a really, really great guy. Very enthusiastic fan of the podcast. Very enthusiastic fan of EVE Online. Nothing but love for this dude. I was like taking him under my wing a wee bit. He decided to take one of the fits from Alex Stone Cold Fit of the Century of the Week and go out there and PvP, just like we asked, and sent us his experience. And I'm here, I'm going to read it to you. And when I'm done, I got some opinions, alright? Hey, Alec, I thought I'd try your Fit of the Week of the Century. Didn't go very well for me, but I had a boatload of fun. Here's my loss report since I didn't manage to kill anything. I set off from my home in Shujurento and roamed through a dozen or so LoSec systems looking for a fight, but no dice, so I decided to take my first trip to NullSec. I went to Cloudring, and an F7C found a daredevil in a bubble at range, so I baited him out. He got into scram range, and he's in my the fit that we posted for the destroyer, the Algos fit. He got into scram range and found a nasty surprise, and my drones and blasters quickly burned his armor. As he hit hull, a falcon decloaked and jammed me, allowing him to warp out. Shout out to Demon Ski for being a coward. Bro.
We all know that pain, friend.
Are you kidding me with this falcon? Demon Ski, whatever the fuck your name is? Are you kidding me? You're rolling around with a Daredevil and Falcon combo? Bro. Like, Daredevil, have some balls or don't have some balls. If you're going to go fight in scram range of the Daredevil, put some damage on it, go in there and kill some stuff. Don't have this, like, recon holding your hand shit. Come on, bro. Oh, you decide to fight a destroyer. Oh, destroyers are meant to kill frigates. I didn't realize. Good thing I had this Falcon with me to bail my ass out.
Ah, classic Falcons.
I hope he gets potted. All right. After that, I repped and went along to 7RM as Dotland showed plenty of kills. Decided not to take on the 30-man Caracal gang, even in a fit of the century of the week. So I hung around the station for 15 minutes, but no one in Horde wanted to fight. Finally, I went over to Saarinen and was happily cruising past the station, baiting out some of the frigates and destroyers that were on grit. When bam, Hurricane. And he links his lost mail. Felt it was a cheap way to lose, but I had fun regardless. Keep him coming. I think he got Alpha Strikes. Poor guy. But yeah, it's a good roam. Congratulations to Stevie for dipping his toe into Nullsec. Demonski, bro. I'm disappointed. What else can I say? I'm disappointed. Expect better from Daredevil pilots.
Why? Daredevil pilots are almost exclusively used with rails now, and it's so lame. What happened to people who would be men and just fight with blasters as hero?
They have Falcon alts now. That's what happened to them.
Oh, God. Oh, well.
All right. Jin, what's your highlight?
I'd say the highlight's got to be something that I can't really talk too much about. It's just been doing AT practice. It's been such a fun little experience. Even practicing for it has been just a bucket of fun, because you get to talk to people about all these little things, and you get to really work together to make a fleet work in a way that just isn't just it just doesn't happen naturally in EU. But once you get it there, and once you start communicating, and you figure out how you're going to talk, and you figure out what fits you're going to use, and you get in there and you start doing the combat, and people start recognizing you when you do something cool, or you come up with a good idea and you share it and you execute on it, you know, in like a 10-second window, it feels amazing. It's something that you don't get anywhere else in EU, and I really would recommend people to, even if you don't have a team in the tournament, go along to one of the practices on like a Saturday and just try it out, because it's a great way to play the game.
Awesome. And we're going to close the episode with a continued dramatic readings of the region descriptions of EVE. These are now no longer in the game, but we found the archive.
They're
on
coming
Reddit.
Back, actually. CCP obviously heard us.
They're back.
Coming back soon.
Yeah!
No, not back yet, but they're coming
we did
back
it!
Eventually. We did it. It's all us. All us.
This is for Kaish region. The history of Kaish is shrouded in mystery, even among the highest levels of the four empires. No record remains of its original explorers, or what they were after. The region stretches out into the eastern darkness like a mangled claw, stringing far-flung stars into a twisted necklace of frozen tears. What did the nameless voyagers hope to find out there in the cold tomb of trackless space? And given the abrupt end to which the region comes, did they find it, or did some darker fate befall them?
Wow, that's an incredibly edgy region description.
I love it. I kind of want to move there.
Yeah, that's awesome. I fucking love that. I will be talking about the Catch region, I'll be reading the description of Catch, which is obviously a region I'm quite well acquainted with, shall we say, given that I live in
Providence. It'd be really ironic if when we get to Providence you're not on the show or something, so you like
that. That will 100% happen, won't it? Oh. Catch has long been a strategically important region. During the initial expansion into the Rim territories, it linked the Carnid Kingdom, Sansha's Nation, and the Angel Cartel to one another, and through its connections to Providence, was given considerable status as the southern gateway by the Amar Empire. Unlike regions such as Pure Blind, however, its importance did not fade with the dawn of the Capsular Era, as its branching links to the East and West ensured continued relevance. As a consequence, it earned itself a bloody reputation. Some say the very stars reverberate with the dying breaths of countless lost souls.
Hmm.
Yeah. Also edgy. Turns out a lot of these regions are really edgy. No, I like that. It's I still think Iridia is my favorite region description so far, though.
Yeah, Iridia's pretty great. Just because it was so resonated with the actual gameplay experience of being in and around Iridia.
Whereas Catch is more seen as a backwater nowadays, just because of how the subsystem has developed.
Hmm. Alright guys, just a quick throw out there, we do have an advertising slot available on Declarations of War if you're interested for your alliance or your service, in or out of game, I don't super care. Come talk to me, Alexiv card in game, shoot me an email or something. And that's it guys, go to declarationsofwar.com to participate in the show poll, leave a comment. Good hunting listeners.
Take care.
Got the kill mail from the Concord just the other day. So I decided to write you this song. It's not the DPS that you could have sustained. It's something more that bothered you for real. Because of fun. It's really why you're dead. It will jump you again from way ahead. Because of Falcon, your sensors don't work right. You'll just go down without a fight. If you forego CCM, and then you're starting to lose shield. Just let me reassure you, your armor's next in line. You're better off if you just go to mine. Because a Falcon is really why you're dead. It will jump you again from way ahead. Because of Falcon, your sensors don't work right. We'll just go down without a fight. Just go down without a fight.